So today we're going to be focusing on 6 strategies for smart year-end planning. And let's get right to it. Number 1, take advantage of a limited time opportunity. Since the estate tax was not repealed at the end of last year, the increased estate tax exemption, however, is only temporary. What can those of us who are high net worth individuals and families do to minimize the tax? Well, we know that you have the opportunity to make great gifts, and it's essential to address these great gifts because great gift opportunity, because if it evaporates going forward, and there'll be this will be a theme we'll cover throughout this discussion. We want to be respectful that if we give the gifts while the exemption is still there at $11 million, and it goes back to $5 million or even $3.5 million, as the Democrats have proposed, that the more that we give away, the sooner we give it away. Number one, the less risk we have that there is a clawback, number one. And number two is that the future growth of these assets that we move off of our balance sheet, the future growth will compound. So in 2012, over 150 of our clients moved significant assets into trust, and then for a tax opportunity, which continued, and they said all that rush for nothing. Well, in the end, they were right, because we did rush for nothing, but within 9 months, the markets in that year were up over 30%, so $5 million turned out to be $6.5 million. Now, 10 years later, six years later, that $5 million is $10 million, even with the recent clawback back to January 1 of this year where the markets are. So the point being that giving assets away, both to take advantage of the exemption sooner rather than later, is essential. And number two, because of the tax plan. Number two is because of the growth, and we want to get that growth off our balance sheet. So the question is often asked, can I do something more humbly? And the answer is 100% yes. And that answer here is that you can give away your annual exemption. So $15,000 per person times two is 30 if you're married, per each child. So 30, depending on the children. Do not miss on that opportunity to give that gift. It is essential to realize that it is non-cumulative. Accountants have been saying this back since I was a child to my grandfather, and saying it's year end, but we're all focused on holidays and family gatherings and gifts, and we do not get these gifts off. So for sure, number one is, if you haven't made the gifts this year, get the gifts done. Number two is to focus on right after January 1, you want to give the gift again. Because you can do it, while it's non-cumulative, there is no limitation during the year when you can do this. So January 1, give your gift for 2019, and then you enjoy the full growth of that gift through the full year of 2019. It is something that is as elementary for us as teaching your child to cross the street and to look both ways. But if we don't keep repeating this, sooner or later, there'll be that one time when we're not looking both ways, and equally here for these gifts, you may miss a year. So the continued focus on giving. Number two, get set to offset. So if you have sold your appreciated investments in a business in 2018, you will incur significant tax gain. Parenthetically, if you haven't sold the assets that you have either in investments or in business before the end of the year, there's an additional opportunity here. The key thing to consider, though, is many folks are saying, what can I do to get a handsome deduction off of the realized gain I've had from my company or business? Or what can I do to postpone or avoid the taxation on a pending sale? One of the great opportunities here is to consider is charitable work. So, of course, there's a direct gift that you can give, and that direct gift to a foundation or a donor advised fund allows you to make the gift, get the deduction in 2018 to offset the gains tax that you have incurred or give the asset of your company interest or shares in your in an investment that you have to a charitable trust before the sale. In either instance, the tax impact is better if you, obviously, if you do this before the transaction. But even afterwards, it's the same year. And so I finished by saying that the tax that you would otherwise pay can be reduced by gifts to charity, but the gifts don't have to be to specific charities as of yet. The key thing that we want to emphasize here is that by going into a foundation or a donor-advised fund, you're putting the family in a position where they can help you making decisions on charity, but you don't have to outline each of the charities that you want to make the gifts to. You have the lifetime of the foundation. And you can not only take advantage of the tax the gift this year, but the assets that are inside the foundation will compound without taxation along the way. So with the foundation, you have to give away 5% on an annual basis. It is a very, very prominent part of the work we're doing on an annual basis for our clients and for you all. And the answer here is once we set that structure up, year after year, you can continue to be making gifts for the purposes of enjoying the tax deduction and doing great good work by having your family involved in making these charitable gifts. It's a great way to keep the family together. Okay, number three, plan to save. So the drastic limitation on the state and local tax deduction for federal income tax purposes means that those who anticipate selling appreciated investments or a business in the next few years will experience unusually high capital gains taxes. But what can you do so that your state capital gains would not be imposed? Okay, so first of all, this is not all states. And we're seeing a movement in folks moving out of state. There's a good article in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, not article, but an op-ed piece that talked about the state of New Jersey and the flight that they're currently experiencing and hoping to change because of the gains tax rate you have. Many of you on this call have ties to New York City, and of course, New York City tax and New York State tax is also a significant number. Many of you are on the West Coast, California as well. It is typically states that are along the coast of both sides who typically have higher social programs and, frankly, did not necessarily vote for Donald Trump, so there was less concern when the Republicans passed this bill that said states would lose the tax deduction. Will this change with the new administration? It is very, very hard to say. Property taxes is another where you're no longer getting a deduction above a certain limited amount. So job one here is, do I move states? And many, including myself, have family, and the richness of life is family, and so moving right now would not be a possibility. Yes, of course, we as a firm have a Florida office, and because of that, addressing our clients who are moving to a state income tax-free state like Florida, one of the largest retreat states in the nation right now, we're all in that direction, but many of us are not prepared to move. So there are opportunities to set up trusts where you can avoid the state income tax. And the two key states that this is available in is Delaware and Nevada. And in the past years prior to this year, we've had folks setting up trusts. Ding is the trust for Delaware, and Ning is the trust for Nevada. And these are trusts where you make a gift into a trust. You will not be paying the income tax, which is typically the strategy. We're always having the grantor pay the tax. It's a great estate planning strategy. But in this instance, we're going to have the trust pay the tax. And in these two states, the trust is not subject to state income tax. And so in years past, when we had a major liquidity event for a client who did not want to pay the state income tax in the state they lived in, even though they got a deduction against their federal tax, they still were motivated by the idea of this unique liquidity event and maybe saving $1 million in gains tax to the state that they lived in. If there was a $10 million gain, for example, the issue becomes far more inclusive today because you don't have to have a huge gain that you would pay state gains tax on. Today, that you've lost the ability to deduct the gains tax on the earnings that you have if you're in California, for example, says maybe I should be solving for something on a much more simplistic way. And so many of you have heard and are now saying I should create a trust in Delaware or Nevada for any gains that I'm potentially going to suffer. We have found that there are truly positive results in doing that. We have been spending significant amount of time over the past year since the loss of the deduction has taken place, and folks who are not necessarily experiencing a significant liquidity monetizing event are saying, I just want to do this for my current portfolio. So more conversation can take place on that, but it's certainly something for you to consider, certainly as we come to year end. Next is add to your income tax toolbox. So in spite of the marginal reduction of the federal income tax rate, now that the federal deduction under the SALT Act has been significantly constrained, we're all looking for more tax efficient investments. In fact, those of you who are on this call and others who are running their family offices know that the most efficient form of gaining alpha on your investment is to look at the taxation aspect of it. So we are, for certain, clearly focusing on what we can do to minimize the taxation we have. Life insurance continues to be one of the most efficient forms of compounding without taxation. And today, there's a movement back to doing not just typical variable or whole life coverage, but we're focusing, again, on the notion of purchasing insurance that actually is involving investments, private placement insurance, for example, where there are investments that could be compounding and suffering significant gains and therefore taxed. So having these wrapped in an insurance policy has once again been reinvigorated, particularly in its newest iteration. The focus is giving you more flexibility on the kinds and types of investments that would go inside the insurance wrapper. But on its most basic level, insurance has always been, and now more than ever, continues to be a strategy for compounding without taxation. Many of you have said, my insurance is the fixed income component of my diversified portfolio, and we agree. So we encourage you to do that. It also solves for a life insurance benefit as well. Okay, next on your list is a legal document that you want to keep in place. This week we did a presentation, and the question from the audience was, how frequently do I need to update my power of attorney? And the answer is that the power of attorney is a special gift that the government has allowed us to employ to avoid going through the complex proceedings of guardianship. So if I were sick, my wife Rosemary would listen in, and she would then be able to step in and act on my behalf if we have a power of attorney. If we don't, she has to go through a court order, even though she's my spouse, to act on my behalf. Now, that is expensive and it's time-consuming. For those of you who are caregivers and your folks are elderly, or for those of you who are more senior right now and are thinking your children are going to do your tax returns for you, it would be essential to make sure your power of attorney is fresh and up to date. So powers of attorney, because of its strict, powerful, appropriate gift that we get to be able to act, or could be deemed stale 3, 4, 5 years from when it was originally created. So don't mess around on this. Get a current power of attorney. We as an office are doing income tax for many of our clients right now. It's one of the quickest growing areas because of the new complexity, particularly under the SALT Act. So the issue is not only are you getting a power of attorney so that someone in your family can sign for you, but you also may get a power of attorney so that we can communicate with the IRS and find out what they show as income so that we can complete your tax returns. Powers of attorney, key to keep updated. Okay. With respect to your insurance, a key piece to keep in mind is that while insurance compounds without tax, I'm on number 5, ensure you're utilizing your insurance. While insurance compounds without tax, while insurance can pass to the surviving spouse without any taxation as long as they're a U.S. citizen, the answer here is that it will not pass down to your children or your loved ones without tax. So please keep in mind now more than ever to get your insurance to move into an irrevocable trust where you can avoid estate tax altogether, and a key essential piece. Okay, next on the list is number 6, think outside the box. So for those who have an estate tax vulnerabilities but are elderly or in poor health, the acquisition of life insurance policy may be uneconomical or impossible. So we have now been doing a significant amount of work in what we call multi-generational or family split dollar. Consider this opportunity before your half birthday comes and we're talking about your insurability because birthdays reflect insurability. And each year you pass one, the cost of insurance goes up. So if we speak about your G1, which is grandparents, they have the access to assets. Number 2 is the children who may be somewhere from 35 to 60, they have the insurability. And then number 3 is the children who are anywhere from months old to 25 years old, they have the need. So the idea here is to insure G2, Generation 2, and to have them buy significant policies, but they would be funded by a loan from G1, Grandma, Grandpa, who have the assets. And that loan to the children would enable them to purchase a policy that would be tax-free all the way down to the grandchildren. So Grandma and Grandpa solve for a very important priority, which is to assure that the assets continue through multiple generations in a tax-free way. It takes pressure off of Generation 2, the children, who feel there's a need that they have to provide significantly for their children. In fact, Generation 2 can now skip Generation 3, which is the grandchildren, and go to Generation 4 because they know now that the insurance that their mom or grandma or grandpa paid for will take care of the grandchildren. But the key piece here is also that the loan structure allows us, on the death of grandma and grandpa, to have a discount on the value of that asset. So if grandma and grandpa loaned $1 million into trust for Generation 2 for the children, and then the children use that $1 million or $2 million to pay life insurance, when grandma and grandpa passed away, we're able to discount that loan and reduce the value of grandma and grandpa's estate. It is beyond the concept of today's call to discuss. Please don't hesitate to reach us. We can go into further detail. But the 3-generation plan and the tax savings that we can do for grandma and grandpa, and there was a recent IRS ruling on this matter that has settled it, has settled law that we can, in fact, undertake this strategy. So do this stuff and consider this stuff before year end. Okay, as we continue to move on here, we also want to address, you know, some of the simple things that we are respectful of, and that is, as we avoid state income tax, many of you have moved to places like Florida where there is currently no state income tax. But as time marches on, you're finding a need to see your children and your grandchildren, and maybe your favorite physicians are back in the state that you were originally residing in. This is not child's play, and it is one of the areas this year in particular we're finding the greatest amount of time devoted. So Florida residents who lived in Connecticut or New Jersey or Virginia or New York, or Wyoming residents who previously lived in California or Washington, now are going back and visiting the state that they once left or where their children are, where there is a state income tax. Some of them are moving back for periods of time to handle doctors or children being born. Some are spending more time than even that. This is where the local states are coming after you, and they're coming after you with a vengeance. New York City is among the most aggressive. They track your cell phones, your withdrawals from the banks, your easy passes going through, and your expenditures. On your credit cards, and even your plane tickets. And so, number one, we think that one approach that we've heard is make sure that the state you call your residence for tax purposes, if it's Florida for this instance, that you're at least in Florida more days than you are visiting, for example, New York City. Because the argument is home is where your heart is. It's where you keep your fine silverware, your family photos. It is where you... your temple or your church and your golf club, and that has always been the winner. But if you are spending more time in a given year in a state that you're not saying is your heart, that state could argue that, in fact, you're here just too much. And it's not necessarily numerical. So we've always known the 182 days is the key here. But as we come to the holidays and we're hitting Halloween and love to see the grandchildren trick-or-treating, or we're up for and we'll stay through Thanksgiving and see all of our doctors and maybe stay through the holiday season. It would be unlikely in the old days because we wanted to be in the warmth, but now with doctors and grandchildren, we may be here more. You must keep a calendar of your days, and you must be aggressive about that, and you should not come too close to the amount of magic days that we know will guarantee you a loss, the 182 days. Keep track of that, especially as we go to the end of this year, because it will be essential that if there were an emergency, and there are exceptions, but if there was an emergency, you would need to come up, and you may blow through your days and be deemed to be a New Jersey resident. We have also seen people who are New York resident. We've also seen people who are in Florida who are not there enough days in the year, and so they don't file for their homestead exemption. That could trigger the state that they are trying to avoid. Maybe that's Connecticut, because Connecticut now knows that they have not filed homestead exemption in Florida because they're arguing that they haven't been there enough days. The rule is the following. In your first year, when you're trying to get out of your tax-paying jurisdiction, you must show that state that the new state you're moving to is, in fact, your new home. And that starts with being there at least 182 days. Florida doesn't count the days and doesn't care because you're not paying the state income tax. But the state that you're leaving, Connecticut, says, ha, McManus, were you on vacation? I think so. You are certainly not moving. So you needed always to have your boots on the ground in that first year. Then our clients would say, okay, I'm out of my connection with Connecticut, I'll spend a month or 2 months in London. I'll spend a month or 2 months, in the Rockies. I'll spend a month or 2 months back in Connecticut. It doesn't matter for Florida. We think that that historically has been the winner. We encourage you, however, to be mindful that if the state you call your residence is Florida, has less days in it than the state that you are trying to avoid, if that's New Jersey, Connecticut, California, whatever, your state tax authorities could come after you. Keep good records, good count of your records. So, and then finally, a couple of key things, year-end planning. Do not forget, more and more of you are coming to us and saying, I have a foreign asset, or I've received a gift from a foreign loved one, non-citizen, non-resident. I know there's no tax. Am I free from responsibility? The answer is no. You must report that gift. There is no tax, but the IRS now wants to start tracking it. Your failure to report a gift from a foreign source will cost you 30% penalty. That must be filed timely. For those of you who have foreign accounts, just picking up the interest on your foreign accounts is not enough. You must now also let the IRS know the size of the account, and that's under the Foreign Banking Reporting Act. Those items now are no longer filed separately later in the year. They're being filed with your returns. We're doing a significant amount in that area alone today. And that is an important piece. Our clients are saying, make sure we get the Foreign Banking Reporting Act forms done. We encourage you to start planning for that, to make the reporting season from January 1 till April 15th to be more smooth. So.